You're listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
I'm waiting for my reparations. I need my shit. Dope knife, Mariah P. Y'all know what team it is. She hit the layup, I might toss the mean assist. Y'all want the flavor, then don't trip. Just think of this. This episode, you gon' acknowledge what it means. Celebrated Father's Day, and now it's homage to the queens. Queen Latifah, need respect. Don't forget about Mia X. Rod Digger, no name. If you wanna see him flex, if you plan to stay, Kathy and Alea be our guest. Been waiting on reparations. Start handing me my check. Yeah. It's like this and like that. Dope knife, all lay, but my mama call me Mac.
I'm a horse of a different color. I'm fly. I'm Pegasus. I'm born for excellence because my chromosomes got a second X in it. And I don't think it's an accident that in Athens I'm the best there is. And happen to have all this extra estrogen. Woo, she kind of feminine. She must be psycho. You're kind of right, though. I'm David's rival. I'm taking my dog. The way a rhyme makers, cakes, and potholes shut. Quick as the mind of an ape with faith in the rabble, and even my worthy adversary, scary, cause he's heard of it. I'm fairly obscure, but I'm sure you heard of Miss P. A to the RK to the ER. The ER is where I put every beat that I be on.
Hey, what's going on?
Yo, what's good, people?
This is Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up.
So, how you doing?
Yo, I went through an ordeal yesterday.
What happened?
Yeah, so the long background is that in the wake of a lot of the gun violence that I've been referencing in the show, just kind of talking about what's been going on in the neighborhood, a lot of people have been stepping up to like sort of form organizations or launch programs for the youth, because some of the people who have been involved in the shootings, either as suspects or victims, have been very young as 15 years old. And so a lot of people are just stepping up for the young people, trying to, you know, get them involved in leisure services activities from the government or launch their own like tutoring programs and getting kids jobs, et cetera. And so this one group I've been working with, Save the Youth, had the idea of purchasing a city bus to transport kids around to different activities in town and then have as like a mobile portable hangout spot, like put some PlayStations in there, just post it up on the block and have a spot kids can come hang out in instead of like running the streets by themselves. So we bought the city bus like 2 weeks ago. And the plan had been that my partner Paul and this dude Donald, this other guy that rolls with them, were gonna go down and pick it up yesterday. So they had plane tickets. I drove them to the airport at like 6 o'clock in the morning and they missed their flights. So
damn.
We were like, well, we're already an hour and a half. It's only another 4 hours to Florida where the bus is. So we just drove down and got it. And then we got it, picked it up, drove it back. It was like a tropical rainstorm. But other than that, it was fine. So we got to Macon. The bus broke down in Macon. And so we hung out in Macon for like 4 hours trying to figure out what to do.
Around what time was that?
That was around, we got to make around 8:30.
Oh.
So we were in Macon for like 4 hours, finally decided to get it towed back to Athens at like midnight. And so we got back here. I got everything wrapped up, including I had to like go to find an ATM to pay the tow truck person at like 4 o'clock this morning.
Oh,
so we got home at like four. So I was in the car or otherwise dealing with like bus stuff.
Yeah.
For like 22 hours yesterday. For the love of the children, you know, I really believe a lot in this project. I think it's a great idea. I just definitely did not intend, you know, like I had a whole day planned yesterday and then it was like, well, nope, I am driving to Florida, I guess. So that has been my saga, and that is how
I mean, I want to be like, well, you know, at least everything got taken care of in the end, but that's a hell of an ordeal, though. So.
Yeah, we got to get the alternator tuned up, I guess, on the bus so that it can be mobile again, or like, you know.
Yeah.
There were many things that were still left to be done on the bus anyway, like, you know, getting it wrapped with something cool, and like we were planning on converting it to like biofuel so we can get like restaurant donation grease to like fuel it so it would be cheaper to fuel and like teach kids about sustainability, all this stuff. So now there's just one extra thing on the list. But
unfortunately, had a little bad news in the family. A uncle of mine in Liberia had passed away.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, yeah, there's a a new strain of COVID that's going around in Liberia that's causing some damage. As a matter of fact, it's happening in a couple African countries. Just a, you know, a word to the people out there, you know what I'm saying? Not to push anything, but, you know, you should go and get vaccinated because that's, like, literally the reason why is the stuff mutating and changing and new strains and stuff like that. So get yourself
taken care of. Yeah, and it's truly a privilege to have the opportunity to get vaccinated. There's so many countries in the global south.
Like, people in other parts of the world are, like, hoping that they could get vaccinated and shit and, you know.
Right, so. Yeah, who don't even have vaccines available. And, like, yeah, cases are up in a lot of parts of Africa, I've heard. Well, I'm very sorry for your loss.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's, you know, it's life. But let's get into some more positive things, because we have a pretty jam-packed episode for you guys today. We're going to be talking about women in hip-hop, the impact they have, and to talk about that, we're going to be chatting with author of the book God Save the Queen.
Which is a fantastic, fantastic book, by the way. I really recommend it. Yeah.
That's God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip Hop. The author, Kathy Andely. And we're going to have her on in a little bit. But before we do, you know, I was the one who was primarily on this interview. Unfortunately, Mariah didn't get a chance to be there, which I really wish
she could. I know. I would have loved talking to her.
I mean, it was just a matter of, like, you know, circumstance and scheduling and stuff. But it's like, I felt definitely kind of like, you know, man, I would have loved to hear the two of you guys go back and forth on this topic. But at the end of the day, I think we had a pretty good conversation that you guys are about to hear. But what are some of your thoughts, Mariah, about, like, first of all, just like the trajectory that women have had in hip hop, both on the mic and behind it, you know what I'm saying? And how's that changed or evolved in just even your time of, like, being in the game, let alone, like, the history of the whole thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like I was somewhat of a late bloomer with my own hip-hop career just because of, like, the way that women are treated in the industry. Like, I grew up feeling like I didn't have any, female hip-hop role models, despite, you know, kind of listening to folks like Missy Elliott. But I think it's because of, like, the prominence or lack thereof that, like, female hip-hop artists have tended to hold within the mainstream industry, like, who labels, like, elevate and, like, you know, who is seen as, like, the main stars, et cetera. So despite the fact that there have always been really robust representation within hip-hop culture for women since its inception, I think when that sort of, like, gets filtered through, like, the corporate music landscape, a lot of it gets filtered out. And so it wasn't until I got older that I, you know, started making music myself. But it's interesting, like, the double-edged sword of, you know, even still, like, being a female hip-hop artist. And I'm sure there's a number of other, like, identity intersections where people are like, you rap? Like, what? In addition to being female? Like, which I think is the main thing when people find out I rap and, like, you know, never mind. They're like, what? But, you know, we had our battle rap episode recently. And a lot of that, you know, being a part of that culture, just being subjected to and just, like, an easy target of a lot of misogynist attacks in good, and you could say in good fun or whatever, but being but still, pretty much the only female battle rapper in the scene when I was doing my thing, and experienced just a lot of, like, just had a good tough skin around, like, my gender identity with that regard. But otherwise, just interpersonally in the scene, dealing with a lot of misogyny, like, I guess that's the assumption, like, dudes trying to hit on me and stuff like that, where it's just like, I want your respect as an artist. I, like, want you to respect my music. I don't want to feel pressured to, like, look a certain way in order to, like, get your attention on stage. I just want to be who I am. And so some considerations that I think male artists don't always face. But on the flip side, I think that the novelty of being, like, one of the only female rappers, particularly in the battle rap scene in Athens and back in, like, 2016, 2017, was actually, like, a boon. Like, it had the reverse effect of what I experienced as a kid with regards to, like, the female media blackout within the music industry, where it was like, oh, snap, let's book that girl. Like, I feel like I got more opportunities than, like, the male artists, of whom there were so many, they were almost impossible to differentiate. Like, oh, there's, like, so many dudes out here, but let's get that one girl, you know, to play the show, to do this thing, etc. So to an extent, it was actually a benefit to me as well. So it's just a mixed bag, honestly. And I try to be really upfront about the, I guess, like, I don't want to call it privilege, but like the some of the ease with which I was able to like get opportunities because of my gender, because like I just think it's dangerous to always construe gender as like a form of oppression necessarily, where it's like in some instances actually it benefited me and like I want to be very real about that. Where even though perhaps interpersonally in the scene and otherwise, I had to put up a lot of shit from people that just like didn't respect women on the artistry side of things.
So do you think that some of the advantages that you feel that you got, do you think that was a circumstance of the time period that you're in and that you're active in? Like, do you think
it would have kind of been, too. Yeah.
Like, if you were like the only female rapper in the battle scene in Athens in like 1995, do you think those advantages still would have existed in that same way?
No, I don't. I mean, and because I think today, I mean, like, I haven't looked at the numbers. This is totally anecdotal, but from my experience of hip hop music, it does seem like there are a lot more prominent female hip hop artists today than there were when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. More than I can count on one hand. You know, we got like Nicki Minaj, one of the bestsellers in the industry.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, like there's so many, and genre blending too, folks that sort of bring in, so people like Beyonce and their delivery in their music, it's increasingly popular for her to like take on like a hip hop, like a rapper's affect in some of her songs, because it's like being normalized that like being a woman that raps is cool.
I think we've talked about that Beyonce thing before. I still say Beyonce be spitting.
Beyonce be spitting. I don't know who writes your lyrics. I hope it's her, because goddamn, sometimes it's like, ooh, that's nasty. Lord of mercy. Jesus Christ. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I like to believe that girls growing up today, though representations of women in hip hop are still highly sexualized, there's at least a greater representation in general. So there's like a little girl growing up today can be like, oh, I can be a rapper, because like they see the music videos. They watch the YouTube, you know, they see women doing this thing. Whereas when I was growing up, it was like, look at Missy Elliott flailing around in some trash bags on MTV. And I can't stand the rain, you know, like, and that was effectively it in terms of my exposure to women in hip hop.
Yeah. I mean, Lil' Kim was definitely...
Lil' Kim and Foxy
Brown. Like, it was all three of them were like around the same, you know what I mean? The same time period. So like, I remember back then, being a little bit older than you, like Missy was like the breath of fresh air.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because it was like, because of the hypersexuality, because, you know, Lil' Kim kind of came out the gate with the hypersexuality thing, and then obviously when something's popular, you have a bunch of, you know, like people like that kind of imitate, you know what I'm saying? So it kind of seemed like that was a saturation. So by the time Missy Elliott came around, it was like, yo, I'm just doing like these crazy wild videos and I'm in a trash bag and I'm, you know, wilding out and shit. It was like, oh man, that's cool. It's like quirky and weird. And you know what I mean? It was like an alternative. But how do you feel any kind of way, like the same way that certain images are proliferated throughout hip hop? Like, you know, sometimes when we talk about, like the glorification of gang life and gang imagery and stuff like that. Do you think that kind of that same sort of thing might be happening on any level with like in the mainstream with female artists, like the proliferation of the?
Yeah, I do think so. I think that there's a sense of like to be hard in this industry. There's like a couple different ways. Like, got a lot of money, I'll fuck you up. I like, you know, I bang. I like, I'm strapped, or like. Like, I get it in, and like, I not own that in terms of like female rappers. It's like, I'm gonna show you I'm a hard bitch, because like, I'm gonna get into some pretty graphic detail about like what's about to go down when the lights go off, kind of thing. Like, I do think that is a very predominant,
it's like a trope at this point, almost,
it's a trope, both in the lyrics and the music videos. But like, you know, we have people like Princess Nokia that like are also owning like female representation in a very outside the box way of like what your body can be like, and like owning that, and just owning different, you know, what you wear, you know, it's like different kind of stuff like that. I think that we are, even if it's mostly within the underground, just like expanding notions of femininity within hip hop of recent. And I think that's good. It's good. I mean, it might take a while to trickle into the mainstream. And depending on how you define mainstream, someone like Princess Nokia is highly popular.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're broadening the horizon, I think. I think that we're getting towards, like, novel forms of storytelling and different, like, in visual representations, different ways women can look in hip-hop. But it's ultimately a battle against, like, what capital rewards. Like, I think that we do see a lot of sexualized imagery and, like, lyricism among women because, like, that's what will get you on, that's what will get you, you know, play, you know, Universal Music will drop that. Sony was going to drop that, you know.
No doubt. It's the reason that you see, you know, the violent imagery and the gun imagery. It's what the market demands. You know what I mean? It's what the market rewards. So that's what the market's going to get. So we are going to take a little break, and then when we get back, we're going to have Kathy Andele, and we're going to talk to her about women in hip-hop and her book, God Save the Queens. So today we are chatting with author of the book, God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop, Kathy Andele. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. I really need to invest in like a soundboard so when I introduce people like that, I can like press like the audience sounds like, yay, like welcome you to the show.
Right.
So the first thing that I want to ask is, I always like to ask people because it interests me, how did you get into hip hop?
Hip hop as?
As just like a fan, just from, you know, what was it about hip hop that piqued your interest to get into?
As a fan, you know, I'm an 80s baby, and when I kind of left the fog of the boy band era, and I'm talking New Kids on the Block, not Backstreet Boys, yeah, because I'm that old. I think that I would say that I would mark like 1989, you know, 88, 89, that period of time. The first video that I think I really just gravitated towards was Ladies First. And it was one of those things where I was like, wait, what's happening here, right? And I was only like 10 years old. But then it was in 92 with TLC, They Ain't Too Proud to Beg. And, you know, there were so many other songs and videos in between. But when I can say that I went from hip-hop fan to hip-hop head, I would say it was during that period of time.
Yeah.
And it's a funny introduction because, you know, it, like, Ain't Too Proud to Beg literally set the tone for my entire style up until Fuji Law, which then changed it all up again. And, you know, I was a Fuji's fan in between, too. For whatever reason, Boof Boff was like, I was like, wow, this is a great song. And, you know, because I was a Sister Act 2 fan,
yeah,
and because of Lauryn Hill, but I think, like, I went through these, like, little periods of time where, like, if you start with, it goes from, like, Ladies First, Ain't Too Proud to Beg, Fuji Law, and then, like, No Time by Lil' Kim. I have very specific moments, and there's, the guys are in between, too, but, you know, we're here to talk about the ladies, so I am, you know, keeping it topical. But that was definitely, I would say, Ladies First.
So if Ladies First was, like, your, the thing that made you go from just being a fan to like being a head, mm-hmm, then is it fair to say that like strong female oriented hip hop was kind of like the thing that opened your eyes to like what the possibilities of what could be done with the genre?
It was more, yes, but it was also a relatability factor because, you know, it was aspirational at that point where it's like, oh, I could be that cool one day. Right. And I think that was one of the things that also, because if you're thinking about that time period, too, I was like a big fan of A Different World and everything that was going on. The whole like flower child era of hip hop, like there was
like that conscious streak.
Yeah.
That was,
and it was
through,
a vibe,
you know?
And it was different. It was fundamentally different from what I as a kid had been listening to. Mm. And I think what, you know, I grew up in a single parent household with my mom. So I was always drawn to strong female leads. And I was, you know, raised an only child. So to see that in other women even as a kid, it just, it was representative of my mother. It was representative of who I wanted to grow into, you know? And I can say I wasn't having like these really deep thoughts as like a 10-year-old, but I know throughout, throughout over the years, what always piqued my interest in the way of hip hop has always been what has connected with me based upon like my own values and the women around me and the woman I wanted to become.
So then, okay, so now going from being like a hip hop head to actually being someone who is involved with like, you know, whether you want to say hip hop industry or hip hop culture, you're like, you know, and you've been ingrained and involved in it for 20 years plus. So what was it that made you then make that transition?
Well, as a kid, I might have written on a few walls. That might have been my first
word up.
My first introduction to the to the elements. But you know, I, as far as working in hip hop, as a teenager, I worked at a record store, and my section was the hip hop section. Because of course, right? It was actually hip hop and electronic, which was really funny because the two beats that I would write about became hip hop and electronic music because okay. It was just cataloging and constantly knowing release dates and reading liner notes. It just became a fascination, and then from there I went and I worked at places like Fat Beats and things like that. But you know, when I was 19, I started handing out flyers for The Roots and promoting their Black Lily concert series.
From Philly?
I'm from Jersey.
You're from Jersey.
But Black Lily was also at the Wetlands in New York. And they were pushing, you know, Black Lily into 99. So I was like handing out flyers and doing all this stuff, and that's when you know, Things Fall Apart happened. They won the Grammy, all these things. And I like literally hopped on at that point. And it became clear to me that in some way, shape, or form, I wanted to become part of, beyond, you know, the culture of hip hop, the industry of hip hop, right? And it contribute in some way. I knew I couldn't rap. I certainly couldn't break. And I really tried and failed when I was at Fat Beats to DJ. I could do a little something, but I'm not going to sit there and, you know, put a DJ in front of my name unless it's DJ Tanner. But I during that period of time, too, is when I got started in writing. And there were so many people who were a part of the Roots OK Player message boards who were magazine editors and writers and did all that kind of stuff. And you know, I was a writer. I always wrote. As a little kid, I always, you know, had journals, and I was a writer. And I was wait a minute.
Do you remember what your first, like, story was?
I do. I covered, you remember when the graffiti writers were tagging on trucker caps?
Yeah.
My first story was a little write-up about how that was, like, returning to fashion.
I had a friend who did that too.
Like, for real?
He made some good money doing that. We're based in Georgia. I live in Savannah, Georgia, my co-host lives in Athens. So,
that was hot. Like, you would go through Soho, and it's like all the like old school graffiti writers were like, you know, tagging up on hats and stuff. And I remember I had one that this one particular writer named Knack, he tagged my old tag name on it. And I thought that was like the coolest thing. And they used that as the image for my article.
Oh, word.
Yeah.
So then from there on, it just started growing.
I just kept going from there. And that was my first print article. But I actually entered in a really weird period of time for journalism in general, because I realized that I could pursue journalism at a time where the internet was kind of like figuring itself out. And we had a lot of those, like, were they live journals back then? It was something. Something was going on that was like kind of like, you know, the predecessor to blogs.
Yeah.
And I used the OK Player message boards. There was a section called The Lesson. And I used that section to sit and write my own little wannabe op-eds and stuff. And it just, you know, it kind of continued from there until
You feel it helped, like something like that helps you develop like a writing voice though, right?
Absolutely. And I think that was the biggest, the weirdest thing to, when you were at certain magazines who want to eliminate voice from pieces because there's like this uniform voice.
Is that like a thing where they try to take like the uniqueness out of the writing styles and stuff?
Depending on the section of the magazine. When you're getting started out, there's the front of the book, you know, the FOB that's got one voice, you know, and then you go to the middle where you get more of the features. And then towards the end is where reviews typically, and I'm going by the source in XXL for speaking in hip hop.
I didn't mention that at the beginning that you've written for the source, XXL, Rolling Stone, The Guardian, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh yeah. Couple places.
So, you know, we got the first writing assignment and it's been going since then. So obviously we're skipping a bunch, but when we get to the point of your sitting down to write God Save the Queens, what is it inspired you to like? Because I mean, whenever anybody takes an endeavor like that, you know, with something like that, I'm kind of talking about it from a sort of artist, you know, perspective. So it's like you as the artist, you're about to partake in creating a book. Like, what is it that made you feel like, hey, this is something that I need to do? And now,
well, originally I wanted to do it in 2009-ish.
Oh, okay.
2008, okay. So 2009.
It had been in the works for like a long time.
Yeah, but publishers just weren't feeling it. Like, they didn't know, because I kind of wanted to do it during a time period where there was a lull in that one female hip-hop artist, right? Like, the one that everybody always talks about, the one. And when I was thinking about this book, it was like one of those things where there was no current person who was like at the top, right?
So this is like you said, like 2009.
Yeah, this was like literally minutes before Nicki Minaj blew. Like, you know, 2008 she was doing her thing on the mixtape circuit, but you know, 2009 was like the year, right? That led into 2010. And yeah, I was like just too late at that point. And I think I put it on hold. And it, over the years, I covered, you know, women in hip hop as my primary beat, like just constantly trying to bring new new female hip hop artists to the surface while still, you know, giving flowers to all the legends and that kind of continuous coverage. And then, no, an artist came to me and wanted me to do her book, and it didn't materialize. And then, you know, I had an agent by then, and he was like, you know, is there like a thing you've been kind of sitting on? I was like, well, you know, I've been sitting on this idea of a book on women in hip hop. He's like, that's the book. Like, create the first one so the rest can, like, they can be broken up into individuals. Like, there's no Bible, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
So that's really where it came back around.
So when you say that you were kind of put, you know, trying to see what was up with it back then, and you said like publishers weren't feeling it?
Yeah, because there's,
do you think
a book,
it was because it was about women in hip hop?
No, I think it was because they didn't know how to create the story. So there's a book called Girls Like Us that talks about Carole King, Joni Mitchell, and Carly Simon, right? And it's like three representative women in that like folk rock singer-songwriter
genre.
Yeah. And I was asked to think of three, right?
Oh, three women in hip hop? Oh.
And that could have, so you could say Queen Latifah, Lauryn Hill, and Lil' Kim, let's say, right? But then you've left out MC Light.
And Salt-N-Pepa.
And Salt-N-Pepa. And Roxanne Shanté. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then you could say Roxanne Shanté, Salt-N-Pepa, and Queen Latifah. But then you've left out MC Light. You've left out Moni Love.
Foxy Brown. Yes.
So, and then there was like this thing where it could be like, okay, so representatives, right? So you could go beginning, middle, and then who was the last, like, who was the looking ahead? And in theory, that could have been at that point Nicki Minaj, but there, you know, at that point, there was also just, we didn't know. We didn't know what was to come. We didn't know any of it. So I think, you know, that was the biggest struggle. And yeah, I think it might have a lot to do with women in hip hop. It could have to do with women in general. It could do with black women. Like, there's so many different reasons why publishers act the way they act. And I'm glad that it finally happened. But in putting a book together, and you take a look back, and now you've got 4 decades of coverage that you have to be responsible for accurately covering. It was like, oh, what did I sign up for?
But I mean, how do you think it's been received?
I mean, people really like it. It's so funny because, I'm just going to say it, there's always like a random white dude who will pull some like female rapper out of obscurity and be like, you forgot about. And I'm just like, it's always that dude that will try to like, don't forget, you know, so-and-so had bars. And it's just like, all right, cool. Like, if you wrote a history on hip hop in general, how's your Ski-Lo chapter going?
Yeah, like I was gonna make that same analogy. It's like I kind of look at it as, you know, hip hop is like a history book that has its chapters, and it's like it's not somebody not being in that history book isn't a denigration to
exactly
their art or their contribution, no more than it is for like you personally to not be in a like actual classroom history book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, shout out to Ski-Lo, because you know, I too wish I was a little bit taller, but it's like honestly, like, don't come to me and ask me why Silky Fine wasn't in the book.
Yeah, you know,
like, you know, and shout out to Silky Fine too, because Romeo and Juliet was a jam. But I, you know, there's I had a whole chapter that had to get cut from the book where, you know, I was carrying on about Conscious Daughters and Nonchalant and even Nana Cherry, you know.
Oh, no.
So that kind of, it just put a hard pause, like looking for that kind of feedback, because it was only going to make it a matter of just like trying to like prove that they like, you don't have to know every single female rapper in history to make a good history book about female rappers.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I used to do is like, I would go into record stores, into the hip hop section, and just like, I'd spend like 1 hour, 2 hours just looking at the sheer volume of stuff that has been released through time. I mean, right. There's so many cats that dropped one album or two albums like 20 years ago.
Yep.
That, you know, unless you discover it for yourself personally, it kind of will be lost in time. So you can't really, I don't know how you can have that expectation that if somebody's making like an essential guide, it's like got the word essential in it for a reason. You know, you can't have everything.
Right. It's just in, you know, even there are a lot of, you know, female MCs that should all have mention, like, you know, Miss Melody, and like I tried, but it was, you know, and I made sure that if there wasn't a whole chapter or something like that, then at least there was a mention,
yeah,
to kind of just be like, you know, this happened, you know, but it's hard.
Or what do you think of the evolution of female rap as the years have progressed?
I think that it's been very...
And I hate saying that because I'm on some, like, I'm on some, you know, dogmatic hip-hop shit. So I'm, you know, I'm looking at people as MCs, and I hate putting the word female before the word MC.
Well,
just personally.
As long as you didn't say femcy, I think we're good.
Yeah.
I think that it's very much in line with what's going on in hip-hop in general. You know, you have your artists who remain closer to the core of hip hop culture. You have your artists who are categorically pop music, because hip hop is now the dominant genre, so it's pop anyway, right? You have the artists who mess with other genres and incorporate that into their sound style. You know, you have, you know, conscious artists, you have sex positive artists. Sometimes you have a conscious sex positive artist. I mean, it's just very much in line with what's going on. You know, there's a lot of everything, because now we are given the luxury of having multiple women in the space, where it's not necessarily pointing it out like, wow, look at all the ladies. Like, it's not, that's it, it's we around, you know, maybe like 2019, about 2 years ago, that was like the cool observation, right? It's not an observation anymore. Now women are just women winning.
Yeah. So who would you say is like, or among some of your favorite contemporary female hip hop artists?
Well, see, my contemporary for me is still some of the legends who are like still doing it. Like,
still
Yeah, yeah. Like,
well, I mean that counts. I mean, when I say contemporary, I just mean people who are still doing it. I don't mean somebody who's new.
Right. I mean, I love Lil' Kim, like, all right. Like up and down, you know. And I do, and I love Nicki Minaj too. But I love Meg. I love Rhapsody with all my heart and soul. Shout out to my sister Rhapsody.
Rhapsody's dope.
It's funny because there's so many women now that cater to different parts of my personality. And I love that we have that option again, like all this like diversity. Like, I love No Name. I love Cash Doll, Dreezy. Dreezy's my girl. Shout out to Dreezy. And shout out to Cash too.
We've covered No Name like a lot on the show.
No Name is dope. I love Latto too. Big Latto, she's dope too. Like, I think like I can listen with a different ear. Even Ruby Rose, like you listen and you're like, oh, you can hear the history. And sometimes we don't think automatically. Like when you listen to this, when you listen to City Girls, right? I hear Trina.
I
hear Kim, right? And I think that it's cool that that's happening, you know? And the thing that was also really cool is in Cardi and Meg's WAP video, just all the other women in hip-hop that they had in there. Like, Suki Hana was in there. Like, it's just cool. Like, what's happening right now is just dope. And I'm happy. I'm happy that I can even hear a couple of songs and be like, okay. Like, and be put on in ways that I might not have been. Like, that Silhouette Challenge is literally the way that I heard a Doja Cat song.
Yeah.
You know? And I know that there's a couple of other Doja Cat songs I've heard in the past. You know, there's like that, oh, Say So, right? But when I heard her rapping on that, I was like, oh, that's kind of like a Left Eye flow, you know?
You know, I was going to ask you about that because I think that Left Eye is truly underrated for how dope she was as a rapper.
Left Eye is everywhere. Like, when I hear Cardi B, I hear Left Eye.
Word. I never thought about the Left Eye Cardi B comparison.
Left Eye is one of my favorite female MCs in history, and nobody gives her the credit she deserves because she was in TLC.
Why do you think so?
She was in TLC.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, it's because it has that. It's just when people think of TLC, they think of it as like a R&B or a pop group. So, you know, people forget that just about every song, like Left Eye, had at least 12 bars. You know what I mean? Like,
I did a piece years back that TLC was the female Public Enemy.
Ooh, that's a...
Where that's Left a nice Eye was a combination of Chuck D and Flavor Flav.
Okay, yeah, that's 100%. That's
but Baby
on.
Baby Baby ruined our dreams of TLC being just a rap group with Left Eye at the forefront with the bars and Chilli and T-Boz singing in the back.
Was that what it was supposed to be?
Well, Left Eye was... T-Boz and Left Eye were the first two members, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was a third girl named Crystal. And I didn't work out with Crystal. So it's the reason why Chilli, her real name is Rosanda. It's the reason why her first name... It doesn't have the same letter, like Tion, T-Boz, Lisa, Left Eye, Chilli, Crystal.
Ah, I see.
You know, but it was like, you know, that's why Rosanda, like, you know, she joined the fold later.
That's what I did. I had no, I didn't even know that was, because now that I think about it, I just think about how dope that would be, and somebody should try to do that. Like a right. A group like that, but where the rapper is the lead. Oh man.
Well, you know, the Fugees had four members originally.
Wasn't
it a fourth girl named Marcy?
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and then Marcy left, and then it just became Praz, Wyclef, and Lauren.
Oh man, did she leave before they blew up?
I mean, do you remember Marcy?
I didn't want to say it.
I hope she's well, you know, but yeah.
Yeah.
Marcy might have actually been there before Lauren, because Lauren's brother, Milani, he was the one who, I think, brought her in, because he knew Wyclef and Praz. I think that's how the story went.
I heard something about Akon was supposed to be a member, but he got locked up, thus locked up, so he wasn't there, or something like that.
I mean,
anyway, this
that would have been a cool group.
Yeah, really, that would have been like a super group in hindsight. So, do you see us being at a point where maybe like 4 or 5 years down the line, maybe, you know, the dominant, most popular form of rap is, you know, female rap, and that there's like, that's like the game.
That's been the game, but people are just afraid to say it. So sure. If in 5 years from now, maybe they'll be the most, will they'll be more comfortable, right? Women have tapped into every single part of, you know, hip hop society. I mean, for God's sakes, find me a male rapper who has a piece of political history like the Sister Soldier moment. They don't have that. You know, we women in hip hop have tapped into every single aspect of everything. And in this, even this year, the most controversy, because, you know, hip hop causes controversy, but what's the most controversy? WAP. Literally.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so no, women are the top. Like, that's, it's a, because most of the dudes, like the male, a lot of the men are singing now and calling it rap, you know? So if we're talking about someone who's just literally straight spitting, it's women. It's not men. Because when women do the singing thing, they become an R&B artist. Lauryn Hill, I mean, I gave her 2 chapters in my book. She's the only artist outside of Roxanne Shanté that has 2 chapters in my book. You know, Lauryn Hill, for me, I became a Lauryn Hill fan. I have a very specific story of why I even, how I came to know Lauryn Hill's music. So one of my friends, when I was growing up and in grammar school, I was like 7th grade, 8th grade. It was right before Sister Act 2. So Sister Act 2 was like 92. So we're talking like 91. So a friend of mine, his cousin was somebody in Grand Puba squad. Like, I want to, maybe DJ Alamo, somebody in that collective. And he said to me, he was like, you know, there's a female rapper coming out of New Jersey and they call her Elle. And I was like, really? Because I was just getting into, you know, hip hop at that time. It was like, I was 1 to 2 years off Ladies First. It was before TLC, because TLC was 92.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah. He's like, and she's really good. And I have this like tape, and, you know, and he played me some rough. And it was when Lauren was doing that, you know, that boof bop, like that Kawataki, like that kind of like that weird, like, you know, like,
yeah,
like when Wyclef was instructing her cadence, and I was like, bleh. But it was that kind of, and but I was still like, ooh, like, cool, right?
Yeah.
And then his, like, I was just always keeping up with what was going on with Lauryn Hill, or the lady they call Elle, which is really funny, because if you listen to the Ladies in the House, Big Cap song, at the end when they're doing the roll call, and it was like Bahamadia, Unique, and it was, and they go through each Precise, and they're like, and the lady they call Elle, and like that's what they literally call her, and that's how I was introduced to her, the lady they call Elle, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, he was like, yeah, she's gonna be in a movie. And I was a Sister Act fan. We were in Catholic school, so I was a Sister Act fan. And then you know, I...
For some of our younger listeners, Lauryn Hill was in Sister Act 2. It was way before your time. Yes. Don't worry about it.
So there's a scene in Sister Act 2 where Lauryn Hill comes out into the playground. She's like, I got the flow. And then she, you know, here I go on the microphone about to wreck it, right? And I was like, I know that whole... You want to hear this? It was crazy. So there's a part where she goes, but if beboppers want to rock, I kick some monkers some miles. It's because of that verse that I started listening to Thelonious Monk. Lauryn Hill put me on to every other artist. Anything that Lauryn Hill mentioned, I listened to. I'll be Nina Simone and defecating on your microphone. I started listening to Nina Simone. But it's because Lauryn read so much and listened to so much and learned about so much. So when you listen to the lyrics, they almost sound like they're contradicting each other, but Lauryn makes the through line.
Kathy, thank you for talking with me. What do you have coming up or going on right now?
Well, funny you should say that. I'm holding. So I have, well, my book, God Save the Queens, is out now on paperback. And then on August 17th, Baby Girl, better known as Aaliyah. Can't show that in there.
That's your new book?
Yeah, it's coming out August 17th. It's on the life of Aaliyah. And I actually, in November, have an oracle card deck that I designed with the amazing Monica Ahananu. And it's the Hip Hop Queens Oracle deck, where I've taken the women from God Save the Queens, as well as other prominent, like, hip-hop adjacent women like Mary J. Blige, you know, and other artists, Aaliyah. And we made an oracle card deck, and I wrote the guidebook so that you can, like, pull a card, and based on the attributes of the artist and their career, like, you can get, like, your intention for the day.
Dope.
And then I have another big major project that is going to be announced soon. But
And where can people find you?
I'm across all social media platforms at Kath3000, KATH3000. Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking with us, yo.
Thanks for having me.
No problem, yo. This has been really dope.
So that is it for us this week. We will be back next week, and it will... I have a feeling next week's probably going to be pretty heavy, whatever it is we cover. It's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step two. Hey, yo, Joel, drop that.
Yeah. I don't even know what to... Yo. Wait, no reparations. Wait, no reparations. Yo. This is a flex beat. See you next week. Listen to the raps first. Don't just leave. Thank you for tuning in. Can't wait to do again. That was the proven win. Freestyler, use a pen. I go from Frodo to Green Street Hooligan. More African than Toto. Please don't fool with him. Cops on my tail, but I think that I'm losing him. And it's record heat outside, so I use a swim. Ooh, I think it's in my reach. That's what I'm doing. I'ma see you all next week. I'ma end the shit. I don't even have to speak. Take my black ass right to Savannah Beach. Peace. Hey, I'm Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
We are waiting on reparations. See you next week.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.